What's up? This is Movies on Up. When darkness fell, he arrived. When darkness fell, I arrived at Dave's. Seated across from me, as usual, is Mr. Dave Bacella.
The darkness himself.
The Dark Lord, Dave Bacella. That's Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. When darkness fell, he arrived is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. Or tweet your guess to us at @moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct and we choose you, you will have a happy Halloween when you receive a prize package, which generally does include a horror movie.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, some are better than others.
On VHS, usually.
Sometimes it's VHS. Sometimes if I don't want to pay the shipping for that, I'll throw in one of those multi-packs I get from Walmart. Those are fantastic. Somebody got, I want to say, most of the Hellraiser movies. It may not have had the first... It might have just been like two through six. Yeah, whatever. But somebody's enjoying the not as good Hellraiser movies, I guess. So tip of the cap to that person. Tip of the cap to you this week for sticking with us through our month of Halloween. This week we did a single horror list. I want to say it was like 2015-ish, maybe.
Yeah, sounds right.
I don't remember. But more importantly, hey, it's great to celebrate horror movies from years ago, and we're certainly going to do that. But a movie that Dave and I have been really excited for this year comes out, the new Halloween movie that's been produced by John Carpenter. He was sold on the vision, so he came back to kind of help guide this project along. The whole band's back together. Jamie Lee Curtis, Nick Castle, the director of The Last Starfighter, has kind of gone back to the thing that he's not quite as well known for, and that's being Michael Myers. And they're all back together for Halloween this week. So we've talked a lot about Halloween on the past, but we thought, you know, why not try and have a longer form discussion on John Carpenter's 1978 classic starring the aforementioned Jamie Lee Curtis, Donald Pleasance, and PJ Souls. Halloween was released pretty damn close to Halloween. It was October 25th, 1978, which makes it one of the oldest movies we've ever done. It's not the oldest. I mean, I know we've done A New Hope, which was from 77. I don't know if we've done anything older than that.
Not that I can remember.
My guess would be probably not.
Because I was thinking the Del Toro one, but that was Kronos.
That was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Usually when we do, certainly a more recent movie, we do talk a lot about box office right at the front, but with this movie coming out in 1978, I do feel like it's a little unfair to spend a lot of time talking about the box office. According to Box Office Mojo, it grossed $47 million. And in 1978 money, that's a lot of money. I wouldn't be super surprised if Halloween grosses pretty close to that in its opening weekend
this
year.
It's going to open. I think Halloween is going to break records. I think it opens to 40, 45 million. I think that's best case scenario, but I think that's where it's going to end up.
Yeah, I think it's got an excellent shot. Everything I've seen from the festival circuit, was it Fantastic Fest that they just did a week or so ago? It's gotten a lot of good buzz coming out of there. I've been careful. I don't want to read too much other than, hey, it's good, don't worry, which I wasn't particularly worried about anyway. So the $47 million that it grossed, I don't think anyone would argue that the fact that it's 40 years ago Halloween came out and it's
roughly
still viable.
The best numbers I can come up with are 186 million inflated.
Okay. Does that include any of the re-releases? Because I mean, it's being re-released this year.
I don't believe so. I'm trying to do it. It's not very.
Yeah.
The numbers from 70, it's hard to transfer the numbers from 78, but the best I can do is probably 186. Around that range. To give you an idea, you release a horror movie now, it makes 186. It's a massive, massive hit.
Yeah, you're thrilled with that. And Halloween was one of those ones that it wasn't an overnight sensation. And I mean, Halloween and its roots, you want to talk about, and a lot of times Dave and I do refer to things like Evil Dead as like, hey, this is a great grassroots horror movie. Halloween was that too. It very much became, over time, the force that it is now. But we've talked a lot about Halloween. We both love John Carpenter a lot. We both love this movie a lot. And I think if you were to have an easy way to aggregate all the times that we've mentioned Halloween and kind of splice all that together, you would probably have enough content to have made an entire episode. So because we've talked about it, not at length, but enough that I think people kind of get it.
Because we've done a John Carpenter episode, haven't we?
We've done our favorite Carpenter movies, yeah. We've talked a lot about that guy specifically. But because of how much I think over the last since 2012, we've been doing Halloween episodes. And Halloween, it's an entire month worth of episodes. Sometimes it's 8 episodes a year. Other times it's even slightly less than that. But Halloween comes up almost every year. It came up last year when we did our 50 greatest horror movies of all time. I don't know exactly where Halloween was on the list. It's really high.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
God, if only there was a way.
I'm on it.
Our crack research staff is on it. But we've talked a lot about the movie and specifically what we like about it. So when we sat down to decide, all right, well, 6 years into the show, we're going to do an episode for one of the most iconic.
Eight.
It was 8 all time. So top 10. That's kind of where I thought it was. But for us to now get into what is our co-8th favorite horror movie of all time, I want to say, like, some of the wind is sort of out of those sails, having talked about it often enough. How can we mention Halloween and mention what we love about the movie, what's made it a success over 40 years, by not rehashing what we've already said and try and somehow make it relevant? Kind of the way that I want to say we've decided, but this was like a unilateral decision. So if it doesn't work, it's on me. The way I kind of thought about doing it is picking out some themes or some performances from Halloween and seeing the parallels to stuff that's coming out recently. It's easy to say Halloween has influenced the genre, influenced actors, actresses, directors, but we wanted to be a little bit more specific than that. And I do want to start with John Carpenter. Our first year on the show in 2012, we did a director death match, which was basically, I think we took like, it was either 8 or 16 directors. I don't remember what the total was, but we had them American filmmakers and foreign. And we got it down to, on the American side, it was John Carpenter and Wes Craven. And I believe Carpenter won the whole thing. That's kind of the esteem.
Would it have been Argento and Del Toro, I'd assume, would be the other two?
I don't remember. I really don't remember who the other. It's like, you remember who won the Super Bowl in any given year. You may not remember who lost it. It's similar to whoever won the only director death match we've ever done. We could do it again. It might be kind of fun to do again. But Carpenter's a guy that we hold in really high esteem. And by virtue of where we put him in that exercise, he's kind of the greatest horror director of all time. That's exactly what we're saying. And I started trying to think of people that remind me of Carpenter. I don't mean to say that they're just as talented or that they're going to have a career that spans 40 years. But this is a guy that I think he was in the tournament. He was probably a pretty low seed, and I'm not sure he survived the first round.
Is it Ty West?
It's not Ty West. It's James Wan.
Okay.
I think, to me, he's making a fantastic case for, I'm not saying he's anywhere near Carpenter now, but I think he's on that trajectory. And I'll preface this by saying, I think he's a fantastically accomplished studio director. The Conjuring movies have grossed over $100 million each, and his Fast and the Furious entry was $350 million. Carpenter, as much as he was known for horror, was known to dabble in action. He had the Escape series, one of the very few.
Big Trouble.
Yeah, Big Trouble. The Kurt Russell movies, I guess. You know, it's one of the few times he's ever done a sequel that he liked, the Escape series. But where I really see the similarities are in the horror atmospheres that he creates. Carpenter was able to do that in Halloween a little bit with his use of the camera and the soundtrack, which he did. But what I've always appreciated about James Wan is that he can use jump scares. But we did our Insidious episode, and Dave hates the end of that movie. But leading up to that, you know, I think we can agree the way that...
It's a legit horror movie.
It is. And the way Wan gives you the scares, to me, it was reminiscent of the way... You'll see Michael Myers in Halloween. He's in frame, but you don't notice he's there until Carpenter wants you to see it.
That's a solid comparison because with Wan and Carpenter, I wouldn't consider either of them flashy directors. I praise people like Fede Alvarez and Edgar Wright because of what they do with their camera. You're not getting that stuff from Wan or Carpenter. Carpenter a little bit more. He'll get more creative with it, but not flashy. I think Carpenter, if he were coming up today, I think he would be similar to Wan in that he could get in the studio system because he's visually very safe. If that makes sense. But they're both very atmospheric, like you said, where John Carpenter's great at building this world and sucking you in, and Juan does the same thing. I think we say it in one of the past episodes or maybe a future one. Like, James Wan...
Time is a circle, Dave.
I will never discredit him as a horror director or as a director. I think he's a fantastic, phenomenal director. He's just not making movies for me.
Right.
The horror movies he's making are not horror movies for me. And that's okay. But I will never discredit him because he's obviously very good at what he does. And I do respect him as a director because his stuff, he's not flashy from a camera standpoint. His stuff looks great. And it does help build that atmosphere. And just like Carpenter builds that atmosphere, not a Tony Scott look to where it's this look that you can't really pinpoint it. You can't describe it. But like, oh, that's a James Wan look. That's a Carpenter look.
And I think a lot of it is, you mentioned the motion in Edgar Wright where the camera moves. The shots are planned. They're static, but the way they're staged, the movement happens with the camera being stationary, or you'll see a lighting cue or even a focus to where that's the danger.
Yeah.
It's always been there.
Like he does stuff, but it's not flashy, is exactly what I...
Yeah.
He's not doing cool camera. He's not Sam Raimi. He's not Fede Alvarez, Edgar Wright. Like, he's not doing that stuff. But he does his own subtle stuff.
I think the subtlety is a good... going to transition to the point I wanted to make. When you do see something flashy or the music drops out, you know you're about to get hit with a scare. So you can kind of be prepared for it. But what James Wan does and what Carpenter does, what John Carpenter does so well, is any shot could be terrifying and you won't know it until the director wants you to know it. That atmosphere, that sense of terror and dread is always surrounding the characters. You can't get ready for it because there is no like punch you in the face with like a really loud sound that's just kind of cheap carnival way of making you jump, or something's gonna come right at the camera. That's not how these guys operate.
They're jump scare like connoisseurs. Yeah, they do dabble in jump scares.
Yes.
But they do them well.
You jump because you're scared. Yeah. It's not because
you're surprised. It's not
right.
A shock.
It's not a
jump
gimmick.
It's not a jump shock.
Yes.
It's a legit jump scare.
Exactly.
Unrelated. I wish this shot wasn't in the trailer. The shot with the babysitter and opening the closet door. Don't put that in the trailer, in the new one, because that's an awesome shot. That's an amazing shot. Let the first time
the
I
John
see
Carpenter
that.
John
Carpenter shot. Yeah, let me see that for the first time on the big screen. That hurts horror movies now, is that some of those shots, like, that could be a classic moment, a great theater-going experience, but not now, because we saw it in the trailer.
You know he's in there. I think it's difficult for us, or at least for me specifically, to compare anyone to Carpenter, because... he's got Halloween. He's got The Thing, which I absolutely
adore.
Our
number one.
Yeah. And then a movie like They Live, which is, I don't know, technically not horror, but that's not to say anything about Big Trouble, Assault on Precinct 13. Like, we could list a lot of stuff he's done. James Wan is probably never going to have a list like that for me, where I'm going to be able to talk in as much reverence about his stuff. Because like Dave said, his stuff doesn't appeal to us as much, but I think that just technically, I think Wan is very reminiscent of Carpenter, even if the subject matter doesn't grab me as much.
And here's where your point stands, is that in 15 or 20 years, when they're beaming podcasts right into your brain holes or whatever, people that look back 15, 20 years, they're gonna see the Wan movies, the Wanaverse, and he's going to be horror from 2004, whenever Saw came out. He is a 15-year chunk of horror movies.
And could be even longer than that.
And counting.
Yeah.
Because as of now, Saw, 10 of them. Jigsaw makes 11, I think. And then all the spinoffs and the sequels. Like, when you go forward 20 years and you look back, horror movies from the mid-2000s until... who knows when? The mid-2020s? I don't know when he's done.
Yeah.
2030?
Whatever he wants to be.
That is Wan's stamp.
Whenever he decides that he wants to play video games more than make movies like Carpenter has.
Yeah.
It's a hard label to put on somebody. Like, this guy's the next John Carpenter. I hate doing that because you look at somebody like LeBron. Oh, he's the next Michael Jordan. Not really.
Than Jordan.
Yeah. His game's more similar to somebody else. Like, that's doing a disservice to a director like Juan, saying he's the next Carpenter. But, I mean, do you see anybody else that reminds you of Carpenter? It doesn't mean he's better than or he's just as good as, but reminds you of some things that Carpenter did.
It's an out there one, and not so much stylistically, and it's hard to compare, but like when you think of John Carpenter, it's like, oh, everything he did was like a hit. Like everything he did is a good movie. And Clive Barker, he's only directed 2 movies and they're horror classics. Like they're iconic horror movies. So like that was what immediately came to mind, is like if you go 2 for 2, yeah, you're batting 1,000, but it's not as impressive as the guy that goes 22 for 23. So, I mean, that's the first thing that came to mind. Stylistically, I mean, maybe somebody like Flanagan. He's doing it on a smaller scale, but his stuff, he's not flashy with the camera. He's building that world. Like in Hush, you're in that house. In Oculus, you're in that house. He's doing it on a smaller scale with a fraction of the talent. But there's a spot for that. Gerald's Game is another one of those. Like, you're in that movie. And
you're in that bed.
Yeah. He's finding what he's doing well, and he's honing it without doing the same thing over again. And I think that might be the only thing you could knock on Juan, is that Insidious and the Conjuring movies, like, I don't know the difference. I've seen the first of each of them.
Yeah.
If it doesn't involve Rose Byrne, I can't place the movie, because I know she's in Insidious.
Yes, she is.
But if I picture a scene that it doesn't have her or Darth Maul in it, I don't know if that's from The Conjuring or Insidious.
Because Patrick Wilson's in both of them.
Yeah, yeah. And he's in Aquaman. Flanagan is a similar stylistically wise, but not as impactful wise.
And doing things, like you said, not necessarily derivative.
He's staying in his wheelhouse without doing the same thing over.
Yeah. I mean, Carpenter didn't really do a lot of sequels. You know, that was kind of a thing. He wished he really didn't have anything to do with the sequel for Halloween, but I think
Juan did Saw, and then I don't think he was involved other than like a producer.
But I think he directed Insidious 2, if I'm not mistaken.
And then Wannell, I think, did 3.
Yeah.
His writing partner. But
40 years later, I think it's fascinating to look at Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, this was her first feature. She had been on TV and some smaller stuff before that, but this was her first feature role, and she's carrying what at the time was just a small indie horror movie, which that's a good first job to get as an actress. And what she did in her first role, I mean, I can't imagine. All my analogies are sports related. It'd be like hitting a walk-off home run in Game 7 of the World Series in your first at bat. Something that people go their entire lives without ever doing, and she did the second she stepped on the screen. Laurie Strode is this archetypal final girl, and her portrayal of a strong, confident, yet vulnerable hero, I think, kind of shifted the paradigm to the final girls that we all know and love. Laurie Strode was not the first girl to survive a horror movie. You look at Texas Chainsaw Massacre from a couple years before, he had a female survivor, but she... nothing like Laurie Strode. She basically survived just because everybody else got killed first.
Yeah, she was faster than everybody
else.
Exactly.
She was faster than the kid in a wheelchair. Yeah. So, yeah.
Kid.
It wasn't about her capability. So this idea of the Final Girl, that movie that has probably already made our list, The Final Girls, really kind of plays on that archetype. I do think that it started with Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, she is like the OG.
And it laid the blueprint for, you have Heather Langenkamp in the first Nightmare, and then look at each Nightmare movie after that. You kind of have a different one. Friday the 13th, I don't think played as far into the Survivor Girls as much, but you had them like Laura Park Lincoln and...
Yeah, I would say like realistically, the first two both had Survivor Girls that were in that realm of chastity and kind of the one that's not partying. She always gets left behind. Yeah. And
I guess they weren't as memorable. I like the Friday series and Friday the 13th. The memorable girl. Survivor
Felicia
girls,
was a fantastic final girl.
They weren't great characters, where you remember Heather Langenkamp.
Yeah.
And I think it set up the blueprint, and I feel like it was kind of followed in the 80s and somewhat in the 90s, but I feel like when we got that rash of trying to bring the slasher back, and what was that, the early like 2000s, where we had the My Bloody Valentine remake and Valentine and stuff like that. I feel like they tried to follow it more, but the thing they were lacking was Jamie Lee Curtis, pretty much. Like, they were putting pretty faces in there and not great actresses.
I feel like that's another one of the archetypal characters, is you just have, like the buxom girl that was PJ Souls in this movie, but she actually had a character. She was well done. Everybody in this movie was well done. But you have those type of characters, and I do think that at some point we got it flipped as to, not saying that Jamie Lee Curtis is unattractive or that Heather Langenkamp was unattractive, or even spinning it forward to Scream, Neve Campbell is attractive, but they don't have to be this beauty queen, because there's more to the characters than that.
Like, there used to be a thing where it was like, oh, you have to pass through the horror movie. Like, and yeah. I mean, it just ended recently. Like, Jennifer Lawrence had her horror movie, what was Silent House, and or Elizabeth
House
Olsen
at the end of the street.
Yeah, Elizabeth Olsen had Silent House or something. Like, and there was used to be that thing to where, like, oh, this is how you Rooney Mara in Nightmare remake. Mm-hmm. Like, but we're not there anymore. And we have better actresses now that are taking more chances and getting bigger. And it's like, it's disappointing, because I would love to see some of these in horror movies that when they do go and do them, they're really good. Like, Zoe Kazan did, I forget, just The Monster. It was some weird. She was really, really good in that. And
Jessica Chastain's done hers. It might be on your list somewhere.
Yeah, I forget about that one.
Yeah.
She's got another one coming up.
And done a couple. She was on one of my lists.
Yeah, I think we're in this era where I want to see these actresses play survivor girls, because if it's written right, those are some of the best characters ever. And what Halloween did, not just with the survivor girl, but the other characters, where we were in that rash of slashers, it's just body count. You just want a high body count. Where British horror in, like, the early 2000s up until recently, like, what they did really well was you have a lesser body count, but the counts matter. The deaths really matter. That's what always drawn me to, like, some of the foreign horror movies, or as I call them, horror movies. You have less body count, but the count more. And Halloween did that. You had good characters. You didn't just have the people that show up there just to get killed, pretty much.
That you understood how they were related to each other. You understood the friendships. They weren't just, oh, I feel like these kids are just meeting each other today just so that they can all die except for the one that's not going to have sex.
I think the perfect example of what I'm talking about, Final Destination movies. These are supposed to be like friends, but then they die these horrible, horrific deaths most of the time in front of each other. But then they just go, like, get coffee. It's like, oh, Rob just had a spike blow up and go through his eye and put his eyeball through a fence. You know, go get a Moon Over My Hammy. It's just like,
gotta eat.
I do like Moon Over My Hammy. The deaths didn't matter, and if they don't matter to the character, it's hard to care as a watcher. And what Nightmare did great is that even if the deaths don't matter, you make them memorable.
Yeah.
Where video game kid, the deaf kid, he's dying this way because of who he is. So you have to build that character enough to know that, like, oh, he's dying in video games because he likes video games. So you lost a lot of that in these, like, PG-13, like, cater-to-kid movies.
Looking back at Halloween, this archetypal character that Jamie Lee Curtis played, that's 40 years ago. So we had this idea of what a final girl should be in 1978. And I kind of feel like spinning that forward, that's not exactly who our final girls are now. And you had mentioned, like, Jennifer Lawrence and some great actresses that have made their way through horror. And when I see Jamie Lee Curtis now, I think of, like, Anya Taylor-Joy. She is every bit as talented as any of the other actresses that we've named. But when I see her on screen, and I think of something like Split, which is a horror movie, and she's the final girl in that movie, but she's not this pristine character. And I think the idea that women can't be sexual or they're going to get killed in a horror movie, like, I think we're past that. And I think that seeing characters like Anya Taylor-Joy or like Makeham Monroe, who I think was, like, our proto Anya Taylor-Joy, these girls are absolutely incredible. And I think they're playing a wonderfully updated and more appropriate version of these characters that we've seen from Jamie Lee Curtis to Heather Langenkamp and on down the line.
Like Makeham Monroe, especially in, like, The Guest. Yeah. She's a really good, like, strong character that's played really, really well. That she doesn't just survive because she runs faster than her brother. She saves her brother. Yeah. Like, it's such a fascinating...
And if she wants to get it in, she can do it.
Yeah, so, like, there's some tropes in movies that, like, we could do without. But then there are some that are there because they work and they're compelling. And Laurie Strode wasn't the first final girl, like you said, but she was one of the first best ones. And 40 years later, she's still one of the best ones. And it's such a cool concept. And that's why I like Behind the Mask. Behind the Mask was about the slasher, but showed how important that final girl was.
From the opinion of a killer.
And it was awesome. And it was done well. And she played it well because it wasn't who you thought it was. And the whole thing is you find your final girl. Like, that's what part of it is. Mm-hmm. And it's such a cool concept. And it's great. And it's not going to go away, thank God. If somebody wouldn't have nailed it as well as Laurie Strode did early, who knows if that becomes a trope?
It's hard to say. I mean, a lot of times Halloween is given credit for kind of inventing the genre of slasher. It's not the first slasher. It's not the first final girl. But as we know slashers today, you watch Scream. Wes Craven, of all the guys, that's the guy that's going to be able to do it. To take a look at this genre that we had spent 20 years building. He's the guy that says, all right, these are the rules that if we're watching one of these movies, before he said it out loud, we all knew them. And a lot of them were put into place, probably not consciously by Halloween, but everybody looked at that and said, shit, how do I do that? And everybody trying to make the next Halloween ended up making this genre of slasher movie. And, oh, well, Jamie Lee Curtis is amazing in this movie. I have to have a character just like her. And by having so many cookie cutter Laurie Strodes and then ones that brought their own something else to the roles, I think that's how you get a genre for Wes Craven to slice up and scream.
And you know what? Not to go back to the James Wan thing, but you look at, let's say Saw is Wan's Halloween, because there are parallels there. Like, Carpenter made this great horror movie that stands on its own. That's what Saw is. Saw was made to stand on its own. Carpenter's idea of Halloween was an anthology movie where the next one had nothing to do with the first one.
He was done after the first one. They gave him a ton of money to make a sequel, and he took it. Realized that was a mistake, and then after seeing the third one, that's really where he thought, okay, this is what we need to be doing with Halloween. I'm done with Michael Myers. That's why they tried to kill him and Loomis at the end of the second one, but that's not what the studio wanted.
Yeah, so Halloween took Michael Myers, who really in Halloween, he's not the star. He's in it, like he's there, but it's not focused on him. Whereas in Saw, like, people forget Saw, like, is a crime mystery movie. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of finding out who does it. And yeah, the traps are there. But then you get the sequels that focus on Michael Myers, that focus on the traps. And you're just trying to, how do you make Michael Myers crazier? How do you make the traps crazier? And it loses what made that first one such a special snapshot in time. So Halloween is a great original with some very bad sequels. Saw is a great original, which I skipped the sequels because I don't need them, but I'm sure they're not as good as that.
They're not. It's just creative deaths that you don't care about. That's it. And there are any number of movies that kill people in creative and violent ways that we get all the time. But when a movie like Halloween, the new one, comes out, there will be kills in that, kills that we'll probably enjoy, but that's not what's going to bring people to the theater. That's not what's going to make or break the movie. It's capturing that atmosphere of the first one. And, you know, a lot of movies just, they don't hold up well. This is one that I don't think it gets better. If it's been, you know, a year since I've seen it, and usually I don't go much more than a year without seeing this movie, which for me is seeing it a lot. It's always just as good every time I watch it.
I mean, it does feel like you're watching a 40-year-old movie. It is dated, but it's still good.
Absolutely. Look no further than the gunshots to see how dated the movie is. But there's a reason that after 40 years that a studio is like, yeah, let's make a Halloween movie. It's because of the myriad of...
And it's made by people like us that saw it young and like it and have loved and have appreciated it for years. So that's where Danny McBride and David Gordon Green come in. Is they're it's not being rebooted by a studio. It's not being flashied and romanticized and made like a music video by a studio this time. It's being made by people who legitimately love and enjoy and respect the movie. So that's what I am excited about, is that it's in hands of people that care about it.
Exactly. And you know, having that new school, people that care about it, grew up weaned on it, along with Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis and the director of The Last Starfighter. I think that's a great way to do it. You've got people that care about it. You've got the people that know how to do it. So I do really think that this movie is going to be good. I'm not saying that...
Better than H2O?
Yes. I think it's better than H2O. I think it's better than Resurrection. Better than all of them. Better than the Rob Zombie ones.
And that's what you think you forget about. Like, the first Halloween run was what, six? Five or six?
Oh, it was more than that, because you had five. I think it was A Curse of Michael Myers.
That was Paul Rudd. Wasn't he five, or was
it? It might have been five, but...
But then you had that run in the 90s where it was... They got, what, two out of that one. There was H2O,
yes.
And there was Resurrection. And then you had two Rob Zombie ones. There's been a lot of Halloween movies.
It was actually the sixth one. That was The Curse of Michael Myers with Paul Rudd.
Okay.
So you got six the first time. Then you had H2O and Resurrection, and then the zombie ones. So.
And then this, if this does well, which it's going to open to $40 million... There's going to be a sequel.
I think it does well.
Three, that would be,
but
four franchises of, essentially based off the same.
I'm kind of hoping that Carpenter wanted, he thought he was done. And maybe he's done with Michael Myers, but maybe that Gordon Green and Danny
Hopefully,
McBride
like, send him to space. Make him go to New York City.
That's worked so well.
Send
for,
him to hell. Something. Dude,
for
there's
other
there's all
mass
this,
killers
there's all
in the
this
past.
Places that Michael
places
Myers
he hasn't
go.
Gone anywhere other than Haddonfield, essentially. I mean,
camp. Jail, slam dunk, save Christmas,
ride again. I'm very excited about this movie. If that hasn't come across yet this month, I mean, Halloween and Suspiria are two that are very, very high, and to have new versions of both of those in the same year, just weeks apart, has really got me excited about the entire month of October and the Halloween season, I guess, the season of the witch, if you will. Not done with Halloween yet. We've still got two more weeks, so we got two more lists. That would be 16 and 17, so that will be next week. We'll have 2016 and Suspiria. That's going to be a great week. We both love our 2016 lists, and I really like Suspiria, so I'm looking forward to talking about those things, and then we'll wrap it up with 2017 and our discussion of it. If you have a director that you think is reminiscent of John Carpenter or reminds you of him, we would love to hear about it, or you know who your favorite nouveau final girl is. You can get at us, moviesonup@gmail.com, or tweet at us. Either way, that would be great. But we're halfway home, so we've got the back half of our month of October Halloween celebration coming up next week. But until then,
keep it up.